Welcome to the Easy Yoga Podcast with myself, Gemma Neese, Easy Yoga founder, author, yoga coach, and relationship coach. It is my pleasure to have you here and for you to feel energized, calm, happy, and for you to have the perfect relationship with yourself, your partner, and your family without seeing a family therapist, changing your personality, or leaving your job. You will learn techniques and things to help you guide you through a better life through health, meditation, yoga, journaling, nutrition, and all things yoga, for you to have the life you deserve and crave, and for you to love yourself on a soul level. Thank you so, so much for being here today, and I am so grateful and so full of love to have you here. Enjoy this next episode. Hello and welcome back to another episode from Easy Yoga, all things relationships, yoga and well-being. And today my special guest is Isabel Champion, and Isabel works one-to-one with parents to support them through the early years and beyond, and to enable both themselves and their children to thrive and fulfill their potential. She works with parents to holistically approach behavioural issues, developmental hurdles, transitions, parenting methods, school admissions and family well-being. Prior to this, she had a career as a top London nanny, and she is an Ofsted registered early years practitioner and has numerous other qualifications in childhood behavior, infant sleep, nutrition and mindfulness. So welcome, thank you so much for being here.
Hi Gemma, thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, it's gonna be a great conversation. So how did you kind of get into what you do, really? Have you had like a an interest in it, or just wanted to do it from childhood, really?
Well, I've spent most of my adult life working with children as a nanny, and I've got very much a science background. So I did a science degree at university, and before that I did spend a year training to be a nurse. So I've always been very interested in helping people and caring for people. And then I did my science degree, and I've always studied science and been really interested in science. And I kind of just fell into working as a nanny when I left university. I'd had a friend who did it, and I really, really enjoyed it. Children are so much fun to work with. They're just so enjoyable to be around. And because of my science background, throughout my whole career as a nanny, I studied and I did courses and I learned about why children are the way they are, why they behave the way they do, how our interactions with them change their behavior. So every year I do a new qualification or a new diploma or a new certificate. And I got really, really interested in everything about children and the way they function and the way we can help them. And after I'd been working as a nanny for about 10 years, and I was at a point in my life where I didn't have to work so much and I had more freedom to do what I wanted, I thought, I've got something I can share. You know, I've got this enormous wealth of knowledge and experience, and I can really help new parents or first-time parents or parents who don't have a support network around them. Because in London, lots of young parents, they don't have the parents with them.
Yes.
Or they don't, you know, they're working in the city and they don't have a support group, or they're not with their immediate family because they've come from somewhere else. And the kind of traditional way of having children with your in-laws and your parents close by, and, you know, you've got this kind of network there to help you, it doesn't really exist so much, especially in London.
Yeah.
And then the pandemic happened and people were even more kind of alone with their parents.
Yeah, that's true.
Lots of people had babies in complete isolation, which is very scary. And I have all of this knowledge and wealth and a desire to help people and a desire to share my knowledge with other people. So over a good few years, I sort of thought about how I could turn this into a business that I could make money from and I could help people. And I think my mum read an article in a magazine about parenting coaches, which was something that was happening in America, and she said, oh, Isabel, you could do this. This is something you could do. And without really kind of doing too much research into this business idea or the kind of existing framework of it, I invented my own business model and kind of thought, I'm going to create something totally new and something totally unique with what I have, which is over a decade's worth of knowledge and experience working with small children and parents. And I just kind of set up my website, set up my business, and went for it, and it worked, and it went off into the world, and it's done really well, and I'm really happy. And it's definitely something that I feel that there's a gap in the market,
yeah,
of support that isn't there for parents. So, you know, when you have a baby, you can have a midwife, you can have a doula, you know, when your children go to school, you have their teachers, and you can go to a doctor or a pediatrician or maybe an educational psychologist. But other than that, there isn't much support for ordinary families with small children who just want a bit of support or advice or inspiration of what they could do to make things a bit better if they're struggling or feeling overwhelmed or stressed.
Yeah. Because I think I remember when we had our first son, Hugo, he's 9 now. I remember coming home and thinking, oh my word, this is it. Like, how do we do this? Everyone tells you how to be pregnant, or, you know what I mean, like how to get through pregnancy, how the birth's gonna go, and then you get home and you're like, whoa, this thing is now attached to me. How do I do it? And yeah, second time around, so much easier because you've been through it, you're quite more chilled about it. I think everyone's like second or third or fourth, whatever, however many children you're on. But I think as well, it's, yeah, as you just said, there's never really that support when you are going through things like for yourself, and then you've got the challenges of your relationship, but then you've also got the challenges of how to bring up a child, and trying not to, if you had a bad childhood, trying not to then put that onto your child as well, because you don't know any different, so you're just kind of doing that because that's what you knew. So yeah, it's really interesting actually how what you do and how you do it. Excuse me.
No, I really enjoy it, and it's really, really rewarding, and the parents are always really happy, and it's always really productive, and they feel good, and usually after just one session they feel differently.
Yeah. Even
their children are still exactly the same, they feel differently, and yeah, you know, it's a really great place to start with.
Yeah, definitely. And what do you kind of think a child behaves the way that they do? Is that parent-led, or is that like siblings or friend-led, or is it just the way that they are, how they behave?
I think lots and lots of things affect the way children behave on any given day or at any given time. So when I start working with parents, I show them this kind of image, which is like a wheel of all the things that can affect your child's behavior at any given time. So age, developmental stage, environment, what's going on in their life at the moment. So have they started a new school? Are you potty training? Have they dropped a nap? You know, has something happened in the family, like a divorce or something like that? What is their sleep like? What is their eating like? What's their you know, relationship with their sibling like? Has a new baby arrived? And are there any unmet needs? Like, might they have a need that hasn't been addressed yet that you might need to investigate further? Just so many different things at any given time can affect their behavior. And parenting, the way that parents are interacting with the children, is also a massive part of it that we talk about. So are you being too strict, or are you being too permissive? You know, what those two things are kind of the opposite ends of the scale of parenting that can have really big impacts on children's behavior.
Yeah.
And then also I believe that children do have an innate temperament that they are born with, and you know, it's always good to think about adults, we're not all the same. Yeah. Some of us are very assertive and loud and outgoing, and some of us are introvert and shy and more, you know, quiet. Children are the same, they're not all uniformly the same when they come out. They're very different, so children do have different temperaments,
which
also is a big part of their behavior.
Yeah, because I think as well, we as adults don't understand what they want, especially if they can't talk, or you're using Makaton or something like that, like some more sign language. But also that can, I think, get quite hard as a parent and as a child, because you don't understand each other. And I found that as well. Like, I found that I understood my kids better than my husband did. But it's kind of, I don't know if that's like a mothering instinct or not, but you kind of do know a little bit more, if you know what I mean. I know that sounds weird, but you get to know their traits more, I suppose, because you're with them all the time.
Before usually, they go to school. Usually that's the case because the mums spend a lot more time with the children. And that's just, it's, if you spend more time with somebody, you get to know them better. So
yeah.
Okay, simply because of that. But then that balance can often swing at different times of life. So parenting children under five is often very different from parenting children in their teens, or parenting children in their 20s, or parenting children in their 30s. You know, this journey of parenting goes on forever. It's, you know, the bit where they're under five isn't the only bit. A long time where you're going to be parents.
And I think as well, it depends if you've got quite good friends, like a friendship circle, then you can go to them and ask them, or you can come to a person like you. But also, I always say, if someone comes to me about something, I'll always say, well, what works for you might not work for someone else, or the other way around. So trying to get all of this information and then picking what you think would work. But then also from your side of it, you're a professional, so you would know and understand where everybody's kind of coming from in that respect with the childhood development.
Yeah. And for me, it's really, really important for each family that I work with to figure out exactly what the right thing for them is going to be at that time. There's no one size fits all way of doing it. Yeah. And all parents are very unique, and they have their own ideas about parenting.
Yeah.
They've decided to do Montessori parenting or gentle parenting, or there's all these different words that are used now and methods that are talked about on social media and trends, and people have their own sort of ways of thinking that they believe in, and they have their own home life and little family groups that are all completely unique. It's like a little biome with a habitat with these unique creatures inside. So for me, I'm very careful with each family to think about them as unique and figure out what's going to work for them.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I think as well, is it more like a holistic approach will help your child's development at different stages?
Yeah, definitely. And we will always begin by talking about the kind of full circle of what's going on around the child. So I will want to know everything about their routine and their eating and their sleeping and what they're like at school and everything like that before we will begin to tackle what's going on with their behavior at that time, because it's impossible to kind of pinpoint what the problem is without knowing what's going on around them. And often parents, they think, oh, I don't want to tell you my whole routine and my children's everything they do every day. But it's really important, because within that you find the clues of what's going on. So I remember one mum, she told me that her child had been really horrible for a couple of weeks, and it'd just been unbearable. And we talked for a while, and then I realised that they had dropped a nap, and that was why he had been so horrible. And she kind of just hadn't put the two and two together that dropping the nap would have this enormous impact on his behavior. And it's just because dropping that last nap is really hard, and it does affect children quite a lot, and it takes them a while to get back to their normal self.
Definitely, because I think mine, well, Brianna, second one, she dropped it about 9 months, and and she didn't want her afternoon nap at all, and I was like, okay, that's fine, or morning, I can't remember which way it was, it was around now. But yeah, and you think, oh my word, how are we going to deal with this? And even I was thinking, like, by 5 o'clock dinner time, she's going to be flat in her dinner, but she wasn't, and she managed to do it. But creeping up to, like, everyone calls it the witching hour, that was really difficult. And it didn't take long, actually, to kind of get over that, because of what I do with yoga and well-being and stuff, I can kind of put it more into a holistic style of it. And okay, right, well, something's wrong here. This is what we need to do, or we need to fix it somehow. But then, yeah, I suppose other people who aren't in, like, the well-being industry find it difficult, and especially with attachments and, I don't know, like, just anything like that, you can't really read the signs. Like, Brianna at the moment, she's being quite clingy. She'll always want to just touch me, be near me. And sometimes I'll be like, oh, just go away. I just need some space. But I know that she needs me, and that's her way of saying it. So it's really difficult.
And children, they're always going through phases and changes, and they develop so fast, and there's always something new going on, and their brain's doing so much and their bodies are growing so quickly. And sometimes it's really hard to figure out what is going on, and it's just because they're going through a change, and they're going through a kind of a leap in their development, and it's, you know, that it does make them more clingy, or their behavior a little bit different, and it's just because they're changing so rapidly. Yeah. And small children, they're a bit like your iPhone or your smartphone or your laptop. They download new software all the time, you know. Yes. Every 3 weeks they download a new bit of software, and they upgrade everything and they update everything, and you're always trying to catch up with this new kind of software. Yeah. Program that they keep downloading, and they change and everything changes, and it's really hard work. Yeah.
There's no like parenting 101 book that you could just go to, because everybody is different. And with tantrums, how do you kind of deal with that? I don't know if you remember, but we used to watch Super Nanny years ago, and I'm thinking, oh my word, but it always ended up being that there was issues, not issues, that's the wrong word, but things going on with the home life and parenting and the parents rather than the child. And it always ended up being more of, well, you're not giving me enough attention because you're on your phone or your laptop or anything like that. And that's what they crave. And that, yeah, really wound me up in a way. But I'm glad that she managed to deal with it. And I think, yeah, tantrums are certainly a massive thing for people to go through.
Yeah. Well, the really important thing that I try to teach all parents who are going through the tantrum phase, and it usually makes them feel better almost immediately, is that tantrums are normal. Yeah. Like a very normal part of child development. They're so normal, and there's nothing wrong with your child or your parenting if your child has tantrums. And if your child is the one lying down on the floor in the supermarket having a tantrum, or in the playground lying on the floor next to the swing having a tantrum, or screaming and, you know, waving their arms and legs about as you try to strap them into the car, you're not doing anything wrong. It's developmentally normal for them to do this. And there's a woman on Instagram that I follow who I can't remember her name, but she's got a great post that says, children don't throw tantrums, tantrums throw children. Yeah, which is a great way of looking at it, because they're just very normal. They are developmentally appropriate for children at, you know, under 5 and even up to the age of 7. It's normal for them to have tantrums. And yeah. Obviously there are better ways of dealing with them and less good ways of dealing with them.
Yeah.
But they are quite hard work, and it's another one of the bits of parenting that is hard work to, yeah, deal with a tantrum. You have to have enormous amounts of patience and calm and sort of compassion, and we don't all feel like that all of the time, you know. Yeah. Most adults most of the time don't feel calm, patient and compassionate. Yeah. Early in the morning, or you're in a rush, or you're trying to do something else, or this is just not the time. It's very hard to be calm and patient and compassionate, but there are ways that you can make yourself better at this. So I do have some really simple tips to give parents to help them deal with tantrums better. But also the flip side of it is, let's think about you as an adult, how you can work on being better able to be calm and patient and compassionate. And that's things like trying not to be in a rush, trying not to do lots of things all at the same time, trying not to get to the point where you're so stressed and frustrated that you can't deal with your child effectively. And then we start talking about self-regulation skills and mindfulness skills and things like yoga and meditation and things like that. Because if, as a parent of a small child, you're getting frustrated, you're getting angry, you can't deal with it, you know, it's just too much, and you feel like you're losing this struggle, it's not because the child is doing anything wrong. They're behaving in a developmentally appropriate way for their age. We need to think about how you as an adult can deal with this situation better.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. And actually, a few months ago, there was a lady in the supermarket whose child was having like a proper tantrum, meltdown, on the floor, screaming, kicking around, and she was looking at him, and I just smiled at her, and it was like that I know what you're going through kind of thing. But I think as well, actually last year, I think it was, we were going through some stress at home, and I started crying. Like Brianna was, I don't know what happened, something happened, and she wouldn't go to sleep, and I was just like, oh my god, just go to sleep please. And I just started crying, and I was like, right, I just need to come out of this situation. And then after I dealt with myself, I then went back and I said, I'm really sorry, it's not your fault, mummy's just in a bad way at the moment. And she was like, oh, but I'm sorry. I was like, no, it's fine, it's not you, it's okay. And then we just had a cuddle and we did some breath work, because she loves breath work, so it's really nice to. And then that calmed me down as well. But then it's like trying to then move away from that situation. I think kids are very good, or children are very good at being in the moment right there and then, and then that's it, they've dealt with it, move on. And I think adults, we need to do the same, like not stew on it all the time.
Yeah, well, that's really interesting, because children, they really do start every day fresh, like they do, and we are not so good at that. We bring the stuff from the previous day with us into the next day, and we drag it all along, and we have to really try to kind of forgive and forget and reflect, learn from it, and then move on, because children are fresh the next day, they start again. And if you're kind of holding on to any resentment or frustration or feelings, they don't really understand that. They're not the same. They kind of wipe the slate clean every morning. Yeah. And that story you just told is really sweet, because that's a lovely way of dealing with it, because you're also teaching her self-regulation skills. So you're modeling what to do if, you know, you lose it and it goes wrong and you didn't manage to stay calm and patient and deal with it really effectively. That's fine, because we're not all perfect robots all the time. Yeah. You know, there's no Stepford Wives in the world. So sometimes it does go wrong and we shout and we get angry and it's not perfect. But then you can model what to do after that. So you can show your child, what do we do if that happens? You know, once we've calmed down, we come and, you know, we talk about what happened, we model skills of how we could make it better next time, or how to calm down, we make amends. And, you know, you're using that as a teachable moment. So you're teaching your child what to do that for themselves in the future. If they have a big meltdown and they're horrible, or they shout or they cry, you know, they will then learn how to deal with that, because things do happen.
Yeah, definitely. Now we are going to go to a short break. See you the other side. Hey, I just wanted to share with you that I am now an ambassador for Toby Gifts, and they are an incredible company who do coconut bowls, upcycled rice bags, recycled plastic notebooks in the form of elephant dung paper. Yes, you heard that right. Coconut spoons and bamboo straws. And Toby Gifts is an incredible company owned by English entrepreneur Hannah Hodson, and she wanted to build an ethical, fair trade and socially responsible business selling coconut and smoothie bowls to the UK. And it was founded with a triple bottom line philosophy, where people and planet are just as important as profit. The team established partnerships with many different groups in Sri Lanka to build a brighter future for their local communities. And it is such a lovely company to work for. They're fair trade, they have the ability to directly change lives, as well as our ever-present sense of evolving environmental changes help us to keep focus on making a world a better place. So you can get a discount with tovygifts.com. go to tovygifts.com and in the checkout put yogigemma10 for a 10% discount, and go ahead and find out more about them, because they are an incredible company and I absolutely love them. The coconut bowls are so beautiful. The children really love them. They also love the straws as well. It's just, oh, I just love it so, so much. And actually, I'm using the notebooks for all of my clients as well. So yes, go and have a look. It's tovygifts.com and use YogiGemma10 at the checkout for your wonderful discount. And I've kind kind of learned over the years as well with the kids of they want you there and then. So whatever you're doing, and it is hard as a parent, especially when you're cooking dinner or you're doing something that's important, they need you there and then. So if they're coming to you and they're crying or there's something wrong at school, you need to drop tools and just be there. And then especially when they're having an argument or something between them, and I don't know, she's got annoyed and she's crying or they've hurt themselves, it's like they come to you and she won't stop crying unless you give her a hug. And then she can then self-regulate, or they're both actually, they both self-regulate themselves. As soon as they've had that hug, they'll cry for a bit. I don't even say shush, because I don't want to dull it down, because like shushing to me is like, no, be quiet, you shouldn't cry. But it's like, let it all out. And then within a minute, not even that, they've stopped crying. And then they're quite happy to then go on again. So they've moved on already past that.
They do, children do move on really quickly. It's amazing. I mean, often it's just, you know, a biscuit or something.
Yeah.
They're very good at moving on. Yeah.
Yeah. And how would you kind of deal with dinner time? I know a lot of friends have issues with dinner, especially, well, we're fine now, but younger, like below five.
Yeah,
that's hard, I think, a lot of the time.
Yeah, it is really, really hard. And I have a big blog post about dinner times and eating. And it's one of these things where there's so much inside it, like issues and feelings and history. And a lot of it is based on our own childhood experiences of dinner time, what we think dinner time should be.
Okay.
You know, how we had dinner time as a child with our own parents, and what the rules were, you know, no elbows on the table and you finish everything on your plate. And it's a really, really funny one. And all around the world, people eat very differently. You know, if you look into other cultures around the world, what mealtimes are and how they eat and when they eat and who eats and when, it's so different all around the world. But we can get really wound up on our idea of what a dinner time should be and how it should look and what we should eat and when and why, and it can become very like rigid for no reason. And it's really, really great if we can kind of crack that open and open it up a bit and think about it in a more open-minded way and be a bit more mindful about it, because often the way that we think mealtimes should be aren't great for children. And that can be to do with the time of the mealtime, or how long they're expected to sit at the table, or what they're expected to eat, or whether we expect them to talk while they're eating. So the classic one that I see many times, this is very, you know, I remember my own dad doing this, you know, how was your day at school? While your child is trying to eat this dinner.
I really do that every day.
If it works for you, it's fine. I imagine
sometimes
okay in your house, like in my mind, it's fine. It's one of these funny ones that it's just trickled down through the generations of parenting, of how was your day at school while your child's eating. And that question, if your child didn't have a good day at school, or they're not enjoying being at school, or they find schoolwork stressful, or anything like that, that kind of feeling inside them doesn't match with eating, you know?
Yeah, true.
It doesn't help eating. You know, eating should be about nourishment and feeding your body and being mindful of being full and what your body needs and all these kinds of things. So adding in a level of anxiety of having to answer the question, having to think of the answer to the question, what my parent wants me to say, what is the answer that they're seeking, and the anxiety of, did I have a bad day at school? Was it a bad day? Did I get told off by my teacher? You know, it's so much going on there that doesn't really go with eating.
Yeah.
So it's just one of many, many things that are tied up in mealtimes. And especially after school, children can be very, very, very tired and overwhelmed and dysregulated, and expecting them to eat a kind of formal meal is often not the right approach at that point of the day.
Yeah.
And there are different kinds of versions of mealtimes that you can use depending on whether it's the weekend or it's Friday, or it's Monday night after school, you know, that you can kind of vary it and be a bit more flexible and think about what is on the plate. And with adults, we have a very, we're very open-minded with ourselves as adults about, oh, I'm gluten-free, I'm vegetarian, I'm this, I'm that, or I'm having a day where I'm just going to eat comfort food, or I'm just going to have toast for dinner because that's, I'm tired. And but with children, we kind of expect them to eat what we've given them on the plate, and they have no control over it usually at all, unless you've gone down the route of asking your child what they want for dinner, in which case they probably won't want the thing that you've given them. Yeah. Them. They'll have changed their mind, so that's also tricky. It's a really difficult, it's one of these parenting issues where there are so many difficult things wound into it that by the time the plate of food arrives in front of the child and they have to sit and eat it, it's a very tricky situation. So we've got to try and simplify it down and just bring it down to the bare minimum of what that experience is, which is trying to nourish your child with food that's good for them.
Yeah.
And yeah, portion size is a big one, and how much you expect them to eat and why. And there's an awful thing which we all do when we cook for children, is we put our love into the food that we have cooked. Yeah. And if the child doesn't eat that food on the plate, we take it really personally and it hurts our feelings. And it might just be that they're not hungry, or they had a really big lunch, or they're too tired to eat. Or often with really small children, they will refuse to eat, and then half an hour later they'll do a really big poo. And that's kind of the number one thing for very small children, why they're just for no reason not eating their dinner, is that very soon they're going to do a very big poo. That's it. It's not that they are rejecting this love that you've been slaving over for the last 45 minutes. So dinner time is a really, really tricky one, and we have to kind of strip everything back and just think about it in a really simple way.
Yeah, because also I have switched my, like from my childhood, I was made, and my brothers and sisters were made, to eat everything that was on our plate. But now with what I know with like eating and the obesity in this world, not that any of me and my siblings became obese, or my parents aren't, but I'm more mindful of eating now. So whatever's on their plate and they say I'm finished, I'm like, okay, that's fine. Are you full? Yes, I'm full. I don't want any more. And even if there's food on the plate, I won't then make them eat it, because I'm making them be mindful of, are they full up? And yes, they are. So, okay, they don't need any more. And also, I think as well, well, we always have dinner at the table because I like it as like a family thing, and we talk at the table, whereas a lot of the children's friends will sit at the TV. So they're watching TV, but they're not actually being mindful of what they're eating and when they're full, because their focus is on something else rather than they're focusing on what, how many mouthfuls they're having, really. It's so interesting.
Yeah. It's really, really interesting. And it is an issue that can get really, really tied up with emotions and what our parents did and our expectations. And if parents are struggling with that, we have to kind of like, to use a metaphor, like take your foot off the gas pedal, stop the car, get out of the car, we're just going to walk away from the whole situation. And weaning with babies for the first time mums, it can kind of start from there, you know, worrying that their child hasn't eaten enough, and should I give them another spoonful, and worrying that they haven't fed the child enough. And it can kind of start from there. So if we can get in there as early as possible and kind of instill a really relaxed attitude to food. Children between the ages of 2 and 5 are prone to be very, very picky and very limited in what they eat. And if your child is going through a phase of fish fingers and pasta with grated cheese on the top, it's not that bad. They're not going to be a 21-year-old who only eats fish fingers and pasta with cheese on the top. I mean, do you know any adults who eat like that? No.
True, that's so true.
What they eat at the age of 3.5 isn't a reflection of A, your parenting, or B, what they're going to eat as an adult or a teenager, when they'll probably be going to Wagamama or whatever children, teenagers eat, I don't really know.
Yeah. And how would you kind of get around shyness of, I've had it with Hugo, like my parents will go to them and then my mum will be like, oh, can I have a hug? And he'll be like, no. And then I say, no, it's okay. If you want to give Nana a hug, you can do, but I don't want to force it on you. So, yeah. And I think a lot of parents will be like, no, you need to say goodbye. But then they are thinking, no, I don't want to say goodbye today. That's okay.
Yeah. Well, that's the kind of the current way of thinking about children, is that we don't force them to do things like hugging or kissing people on the cheek or anything like that that they don't want to, because it's not a good lesson for future life. It's not a good thing to instill in them that they have to have physical contact with people if they don't feel that it's the right thing to do. So that's great. Also, the pandemic is a kind of elephant in the room with regards to any talk nowadays about shyness or social interactions or anything like that. You know, we had any children who were born before the pandemic or during the pandemic have grown up with a period where we didn't touch people, we wore masks, we sanitized our hands, we didn't touch anybody, we didn't see anybody, we didn't really speak to anybody. So that's been a part of their lives that is quite crucial to think about in terms of how comfortable they are and how much time it will take them to move on from that. And shyness and things like that, you just have to take it really slowly and let them do it at their own pace and model good social interactions. So modeling is really, really important in parenting. So saying hello, making eye contact, saying goodbye, saying please and thank you, modeling like healthy, friendly relationships with people so your child can see these interactions. And then encouraging your child to do things, but not pushing. So
You
know, encouraging them, but it's okay if they don't. You're not going to be angry with them. You're not going to be annoyed with them. There's going to be no guilt or shame if they don't do something. You know, you still have unconditional love for them, even if they don't sort of have the courage or the confidence to do a certain thing. But then I think also with anything that children are a bit anxious about or a bit nervous about, don't let that put you off doing things with them or encouraging them to do things. So for example, if children aren't very comfortable or confident about going to birthday parties, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't take them to birthday parties. Yeah. Because if you never take them to birthday parties, they will never learn to enjoy them or to see the fun in them or to see, you know, that it they might enjoy it. They might have a friend there or it might be fun. So sort of don't let your child's anxiety put you off doing something or encouraging them to do something or, you know, putting them out there. Because otherwise they don't have the opportunity to grow.
Yeah.
If you don't give them the opportunity, it will never happen.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. No, I think that's really good, actually. And I think a lot of people put that pressure on themselves to do that as well. And then that kind of comes down to you and what your parents did for you. And actually, a few weeks ago, Hugo, he's now 9, he got asked to go on a residential at school, which will be next year when he's in year 5. And he was like, oh no, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. I was like, oh my gosh, I did it as a child and it was incredible. You do abseiling, you go rock climbing, you do this, you do that. And he was like, oh no, I don't know, I don't know. And then I said, right, well, think about it, but I would love you to go because I went on all my school trips and I had the best time. And I was exactly like you. I didn't want to go. I was a bit nervous, but I had the best time. And then like a day later, he was like, yeah, well, I think I want to go now. But then I'm thinking, am I being a pushy parent? Because I know what it's like and he doesn't know what it's like. So it's really hard.
No, I think that sounds like the perfect way of dealing with it. And with children, you can always, you know, give them your own life experiences and your, you know, share how it was for you. And it's also really helpful to talk to them about, you know, it's okay to be nervous. Before you do something the first time, we are all nervous. you know, I get nervous before I go into a new setting with a new group of people. I feel shy, you know, but it's something that as we get older, we become braver and more able to overcome. And with the experience of doing things again and again and again, we become more confident. So it's one of these feelings that it's really helpful to explain to children. It's okay. You know, it's okay to be really nervous. I understand that you're nervous and you don't really want to go in because you're feeling scared. And, you know, but, you know, we can still try, you know, let's try and, you know, do our best. So being nervous is a very normal feeling. Being shy is a very normal feeling, to be nervous about meeting new people or anxious about doing something for the first time, or, you know, going into a new, any new setting of any kind where you don't know anybody is really, it's really scary, you know.
And would you say as well, it's hard for parents not to compare themselves to their friends and how they parent, or is it just like, okay, well, I'm doing it my way, you're doing it your way, kind of thing?
Well, I think that depends on the parent's personality. I mean, some parents are very good at saying, this is my way of doing it. I don't care what anyone else is doing. But a lot of the parents come to me, they are looking at their friends' children or their neighbor's children, and they say, why isn't my child like that? Like, why is my child the one who's like this? And my, you know, my friend's children don't behave this way. Or, you know, there's a lot of comparison going on. Most parents compare their children to other people's children, and they want to know why. Like, what is the reason why my child isn't doing what that, why can that child write their name? Or why will my child say no when I ask them to put their shoes on? Or, you know, why is my child hiding under my skirt while those children are off playing on the playground, you know?
No, that's definitely, that's true. And what's one or two things to sum up today's conversation? Now, putting you on the spot, sorry.
So I'm going to say that all parents are very different and all children are very different. So,
yes, I love that. And where can we find you? What's your website or your social media channels?
My website is www.isabelmarychampion.com, and I'm on Twitter and Instagram at IsabelMaryC.
Oh, perfect. Thank you. It's been really lovely. It's really, really been an eye-opener as well. Thank you. Thank you so, so much for being here with me today. It means the world to me, and my heart is so full of gratitude right now. If you are feeling pulled to, I would love you to leave a review over on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, whatever they're called, or Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast from, whichever platform you are on. Leave a review, even do a 5-star rating if you fancy it. And yes, go and follow me over on Instagram, gemma.haley.niece, or I'm on LinkedIn as Gemma Niece. So thank you so, so much for being here, and always reach out to me. I'm always have my DMs open, as again, Instagram, gemma.haley.niece, or LinkedIn, or go on my website, which is www.gemmaniece.com. So thank you so much, and I will see you again next week.